Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The FBI began its counterintelligence program, known as COINTELPRO, in 1956 in an effort to disrupt efforts of the Communist Party of the United States. FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover expanded COINTELPRO in the 1960s to include domestic groups like the Ku Klux Klan, the Black Panther Party, and other social justice movements like the Black and Latino civil rights movements and their leaders. COINTELPRO tactics included psychological warfare against their targets, false media reports, illegal violence, and even assassination. The CIA had a similar covert domestic espionage program called Operation Chaos. It was established in 1967 by President Lyndon B. Johnson to uncover foreign influence on anti-war movements in the Vietnam War era. The operation was expanded to investigate counterculture groups with no connection to the Vietnam conflict. Some of the documents of these espionage programs are available through the Freedom of Information Act. Others are not. San Antonio Democratic Congressman Joaquin Castro sits on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He's co-authored a letter asking the directors of the CIA and FBI, William Burns and Christopher Wray, to declassify and release to the greatest extent possible materials related to surveillance of the Latino civil rights movement. Castro directly addressed the two agency directors on the House floor last month.
And I want to ask you whether you'll commit to working with me to improve the historical record and ensure that U.S. intelligence agencies can correct the mistakes of the past with regard to surveillance of Latino civil rights organizations.
Yes.
We'll review your letter and see what we can provide.
Congressman Castro joins us today on Fronteras to talk more about surveillance of the Latino civil rights movement. He's joined by his mother, Rosie Castro, who's a San Antonio activist and former interim San Antonio City Councilwoman. Rosie Castro was involved in the Mexican-American Youth Organization and was the Bexar County Party Chair with the Raza Unida Party in the 1970s. She says she and others in the movement were aware of the possibility of government surveillance during that time.
There were often times when, you know, you had strange people taking pictures of you and being at meetings, sometimes causing problems in meetings, in dissension and that kind of stuff. And even at night, driving around, you sometimes felt that there was someone following. But I also had situations where, for example, phone calls at 2 or 3 in the morning waking you up, but nobody's there. Letters that would arrive at the house that were just like you saw on TV with the magazine letters cut out saying, you know, we're going to get you or stop this now or things like that. So you knew somebody was out there. But despite that, you know, you had to keep going on and doing what you were doing. And sometimes it even made you angrier that people would try to dissuade you from speaking out.
But the fact is, you know, you were getting these, you didn't know where they come from, but then we find out later that they actually came from the government. They came from the FBI. And Congressman, I'd like to ask you, this came out of the FBI's operation known as COINTELPRO. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
COINTELPRO was essentially a domestic spying operation by the United States government, oftentimes on the civil rights movement and other institutions that they thought might be subversive of the status quo. And to understand just how impactful that was, you have to understand that we're talking about the 1960s and a lot of it in the early 70s, when you still had a lot of formal discrimination and racism that existed, and civil rights organizations were trying to actually bring the country closer to the rights and liberties stated in our founding documents, and our own government was working against them, was trying to subvert that effort. So it's astonishing to think about how sweeping and detrimental it was to a generation of people who were trying to change the country to really make it more consistent with the tenets of America.
And it was interesting to read about the tactics of COINTELPRO. Like Rosie was saying, they would be calling anonymously or they would send letters. But there were also, I understand, violence and even an assassination. But some very illegal activities took place under this particular operation.
A lot of the documents and the media attention that has focused around these efforts, these programs, has been about surveillance of the African-American civil rights movement. And it was extensive and it was detrimental. And they harassed leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and other members of the movement. And they were trying to stop them from pushing for racial justice and equity and equality in this country. And it wasn't until about the mid-1970s and late 70s when Congress takes much greater oversight over what the intelligence agencies are doing. For example, the committee that I sit on, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, is created in the late 70s, and same thing in the Senate, to finally have greater oversight. And there becomes a greater division of responsibility between the CIA and the FBI. There had always been a division of responsibility, but we see historically that the CIA was much more involved in domestic operations and domestic, essentially, espionage.
Operation Chaos, wasn't that what it was called? Which is something like out of Get
Smart. That was their program, yeah. The CIA had their thing and the FBI had their thing. But now, post-late 70s, you have a greater division of responsibility where the CIA operates outside of the United States and really tries to take on foreign adversaries and threats. And the FBI is charged with domestic threats. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Look, I've sat on the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives now for almost 8 years. And so I've seen a lot of the good work that our intelligence agencies do to protect the country. And they do good work. But I think part of going forward, and as we consider things like the FISA reauthorization, part of getting it right for the present and for the future is about being honest of your mistakes in the past. And that's part of the reason that I wrote to Directors Burns and Director Ray to ask them to declassify information they have about surveillance of the Latino civil rights movement.
We'll talk about that letter in just a bit, but I want to talk to Rosie a little bit about your activism. I've interviewed Jose Angel Gutierrez about the investigations he's done into the FBI surveillance of Cesar Chavez in particular. People who might not be familiar with you or even the civil rights movement of Mexican Americans, can you talk a little bit about your involvement in that? And I think a lot of people today might be surprised to know just how much under a microscope it came under from the government.
Sure. And for me, my involvement in the political sphere began with the Democratic Party. I was in college and became involved with the Young Democrats. And at that time, the Democratic Party ruled over Texas and still committed the kinds of sins that we see today in terms of redistricting and many other things. So as I became disenchanted with the fact that there was no representation of Chicanos in the Democratic Party, I sought out the Raza Unida Party that was just beginning to be formed. And one of the things that had been agreed to be done was to run a statewide governor's race. And so several of us, there were many women involved, and that's something that I think no one really has addressed well. There's some more books that have come out now, but I think that once these CIA and FBI opens up those records, you're going to see many of the women that were involved, not only with Raza Unida, but the entire Chicano movement, the artists that were under surveillance, the people in teatro that were under surveillance. I worked with a lot of those different people as county chair of Raza Unida. We had to interact with the other parties. We had to give reports to the state about our elections. We always knew that we had to make sure that any money we spent was accounted for meticulously, because if there was ever anything wrong, you know, they were going to come down hard on the state level. I also did a lot of work in the 70s. I ran for office in 71 for city council here in San Antonio. And, of course, as a ticket with Mario Compián, who was one of the founders of Raza Unida, and my compadre, Bill Benavides and Gloria Cabrera, we were young, we were running, knowing probably that we could not win, but we saw that the needs for change. I think a lot of young people and older people at the time saw the necessity, because we could see that our barrios, our neighborhoods, were not getting the kind of services that other neighborhoods in the city were getting. The 70s also was a horrendous time for the treatment of Latinos, of Chicanos, in terms of the law enforcement. There were a number of deaths beginning in 75, I believe, with Santos Rodriguez out of Dallas, the young boy that was murdered by the police officers in the police car, the 12-year-old boy, as the officers played the Russian roulette with him. There was a big case out of near San Antonio in Castroville, the Hayes Morales case. And one of the things that I think will come out will be people that are not recognized today, like the attorney Ruben Sandoval, for example, who took many of these cases. The Hayes Morales case, he led a group of us to go talk to the Department of Justice in Washington. And as a result, they used for the first time in the United States the civil rights laws to bring to justice the sheriff who had killed this young man, used his wife, the sheriff's sister-in-law, and his daughter, and taken Ricardo Morales' body and buried it. Had shot him, taken him away 400 miles, put him in a grave, and just given a slap in the face by Texas law. For me, these kinds of things that have never really come up as well as we should know them in history will come out, I think, as much of this is declassified. You know, I continued my activism, but also went to work for the city, have worked in a lot of elections, continue to do that, particularly trying to help young women to be elected, and I'm very happy to see so many more. In my time, there weren't that many women, young women, Latinas, running for office. And of course, I'm very proud to have worked on two campaigns, Joaquin's and Julian's. So I try to continue as much as my age allows to be active.
Rosy Castro is an activist, a former interim city councilwoman for the city of San Antonio, and is the mother of Congressman Joaquin Castro and former housing secretary Julian Castro. We're also talking to Congressman Castro today about efforts to declassify FBI and CIA documents related to the agency's past surveillance efforts against Latino civil rights figures. When we come back, Congressman Castro wants records made available to the public to establish a clear historical record on the movement.
Remember, a lot of these individuals and civil rights organizations were labeled as communists. They were harassed. People's lives were affected and their livelihoods were affected. Their reputations were affected.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Texas Congressman Joaquin Castro has sat on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence for almost 8 years. The committee oversees the U.S. Intelligence Committee, including activities of various agencies like the Department of Homeland Security, the National Security Agency, and the FBI and CIA. The latter two agencies conducted surveillance of civil rights movements and their leaders in the 1960s. Castro has co-authored a letter with California Congressman Jimmy Gomez pressing intelligence agencies to declassify and release documents on the surveillance of Latino communities. Castro joins us with his mother, activist Rosy Castro, to talk more about the importance of releasing these documents to contribute to a more inclusive understanding of U.S. history.
I think it's important to learn from the mistakes of the past so that we don't repeat them. There's a policy issue there that I want to fully understand what happened before, so that as we consider policies now and we vote on them, we make sure that nothing like that happens again. That those excesses don't happen again. But also, I think for the community, a clear historical record is important. Remember, a lot of these individuals and civil rights organizations were labeled as communists. They were harassed. People's lives were affected and their livelihoods were affected. Their reputations were affected. Different organizations went bankrupt because they got a bad reputation that I think probably some of it came from the government as an effort to smear them. And so I think it's important that we fully understand for the Latino community what that looked like back then. And also because the Latino experience in America and the Latino story has largely been left out of the telling of American history. And the Latino narrative has been left out of the telling of the larger American narrative. And while this obviously is not the totality of that experience, it's just a slice, I think it's an important slice because these organizations, including my mom and the Raza Unida Party and others, they were working in the most American of fashions. They were trying to actually get people out to vote. You know, that's what our Constitution and our laws say you should do if you want to improve your city or your country or your state. That is the American way to do it. They weren't out there with guns harming anybody. They weren't out there doing anything violent. They were out trying to walk through neighborhoods that had largely been ignored for years, that didn't get the funding and the resources that they should have. And they were trying to get those people interested in voting at the time. And their government tried to stop them from doing that.
I remember when I was speaking with Jose Angel Gutierrez that he mentioned that when the FBI was surveilling Cesar Chavez, he said that they weren't trying to fish criminal information from him. They were performing criminal acts against him. And it was interesting, again, going back to that conversation I had with him, he said that through the Freedom of Information Act, he was able to find many, many documents, but he spent thousands and thousands of his dollars, and he ended up with documents that were just in boxes out of order. He had to find a way to try to put them all together and piece them somehow. So is that a challenge that you also have with the documents that already exist, that have already been released?
Yeah, I think, you know, oftentimes when documents are released to the public by the intelligence agencies or even other government agencies, they're not always sent to you in a perfect format, you know, an easily digestible way that you can go through really quick. And for Freedom of Information Act requests, it can take years to get some of that information. So I'm hoping that on my request that they can declassify as much as possible from back then. And the things that are still classified, some of it I'm going to request to see because I have obviously the privileges to see classified information. Probably going to go through and see what they still have classified and look through some of that.
Well, you did manage to get a confirmation from the directors of the FBI and CIA saying that they were going to work with you, and that came around early to mid-March. Have you had any follow-up, or do you have any future meetings planned with them to order to discuss further declassification?
Yeah, the staff of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence has been helpful, and so we're going to work through my staff and the committee staff with the agencies to get this request done. But I do expect that both of the agencies will cooperate. And I expect that we will get some documents declassified. There may still be some, obviously, that are classified. But again, I'd like to take a look at those myself.
It's interesting to find out why they wouldn't declassify them. Have you heard any information as to why maybe certain documents can't be released or would be heavily redacted if they were?
We haven't heard anything yet, but we will look for explanations depending on what's held back. As you mentioned, the things we're asking for are about 50 years old. And so that's 1974 and back. You know, as far as I know, they probably wouldn't fall into any of the exceptions. For example, they wouldn't be discussing nuclear weapons or things like that that would allow them to remain classified. But we'll just have to see what they come back with.
Have you relied on your mother for any of this information? Like, can you confer that this information on these documents is correct? Rosie, has he shown you any information that you would say, nope, that's not how it happened.
No, he's never shown me any information, but I have seen some of what Angel had had. And, you know, you were talking about the difficulty in reading it. Stuff that comes out of those Freedom of Information, a lot is redacted. So you have the black lines where you can't make any sense of a sentence because half of it is missing. But Joaquin's never shown me anything, but I have seen the difficulty we're going to encounter by trying to get the whole picture out of some of this stuff, unless it is...
Yeah, I'm trying to get her. She still needs to request her file. Yeah, there was an Express News article a few years back. Actually, I think in 2010. I think it was about Claude Black, I want to say, but mentioned a meeting in the early 1970s. And whoever was at the meeting surveilling these folks mentions my mom. And I think that she had purchased some Angela Davis buttons or something. Yeah. You know, so we know that there were folks that were surveilling civil rights leaders in San Antonio even.
Do you still have those Angela Davis buttons?
No, I don't think so. But I did get from that group, I also had taken a petition for folks to sign, and many Latinos did sign that. So I have a copy of that somewhere that one of the guys from the East Side sent me. That was a time when we had a lot of connection to the African-American community also in terms of civil rights, because you had to work together. We were both in the same conditions in terms of not having the resources. So I still have a lot of friends that were active then.
And if you think of the early 70s, I mean, the poll tax was not even a decade gone at that point. You still had a lot of, some formal, but obviously a lot of informal discrimination. The Democratic Party dominated the state at the time, but it really was controlled by more conservative members of the party. And so, you know, Mexican Americans were hardly included in state government, local government, including in San Antonio. So just the idea that the government, that the United States government would surveil and work against the political empowerment of a group that was being discriminated against is just remarkable.
Well, Congressman, I know that you've worked really hard on this issue. You've also worked to elevate Latino presence in media. There have been a lot of issues in which you have tried to highlight and elevate Latinos and bring out sort of hidden history. Do you ever come across something where you go, wow, I really need to continue to stay in office to keep working on this because nobody knows about this and I need to let people know and I need to help people more with this particular topic?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the work that I've been doing around Latino representation in media, also Latino contracting and contracting for women and African Americans and others in the public sector and private sector, a lot of that work that I'm doing now, it's kind of like special projects. In other words, it's not something we're directly voting on in the Congress, and it isn't something that a constituent necessarily called about and said, you know, hey, I need your help on a Social Security case or a VA case. But it really inspires me to continue in service. That said, you know, I served 10 years in the state legislature, and I've served now. This is my 12th year in Congress, so I don't want to stay there forever, but I do feel like I still have at least a few more years where there's very meaningful things, not only to me, I think, but also to the larger community that I'm excited about.
Congressman Joaquin Castro represents San Antonio in the Texas 20th Congressional District. He sits on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Castro co-authored a letter with California Congressman Jimmy Gomez asking the directors of the FBI and CIA to declassify and release information related to the surveillance of the Latino civil rights movement. Read that letter at tpr.org. Also joining us today was Rosie Castro. She's a San Antonio civil rights activist, a former interim San Antonio City Council member, and is the mother of Congressman Castro and his twin brother, former San Antonio mayor and former HUD secretary, Julian Castro. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.